Welcome to another episode of The Beauty Blueprint, brought to you by Cosmetics Business and hosted by me, Lucy. So today you're going to be listening to an interview with Monica Rastogi. She is the Director of Cultural Relevancy and Regional Innovation at the Estée Lauder Companies UK. So what does that actually mean? Well, Monica is responsible for analysing consumer culture and attitude so that she can bring out products that people from different backgrounds and communities can relate to. Monica has worked with Estée Lauder for 10 years and was this year named one of Stella Magazine's Beauty Game Changers of 2017, which I think just shows how relevant her role really is in today's marketplace for beauty. She tells me that she identifies more as a beauty anthropologist purely because she really understands what makes consumers and people tick and understands what they're looking for when they're buying beauty. So here's what Monica had to say when I went to meet her at the Estée Lauder HQ. Hello, Monica. Thank you for joining me today.
Hi, it's very nice to be here. Thank you.
So you're Director of Cultural Relevancy and Regional Innovation at the Estée Lauder Companies. What exactly is a Director of Cultural Relevancy?
It's a very good question, Lucy. It's actually a role that is quite unique and that has been part of the organization for the past 3.5 years. And it's really about looking at culture and ethnicity and how that plays a real role in understanding women's beauty goals and their concerns. And I think it's really important to really understand what is driving people's perception of reality. And for me, it's really connecting across all of our brands and across all of our functions and really understanding how do we authentically connect with women across whether it be marketing, education, visual merchandising, so that when a woman comes to our counter or a customer comes to our counter, they feel like they're included. Truth be told, if I could give myself a job title, I would call myself a beauty anthropologist, because really what I'm doing is I'm looking at culture, I'm looking at attitude, I'm looking at environment, and I'm putting all these factors together to really understand what are the perceptions of beauty depending on where you're from.
Can you speak a little bit there about how you look at different cultures and different cultural practices and differences? Can you tell me about a recent project that you've worked on that you found particularly eye-opening?
Yeah, you know, because when I look at the multi-ethnic consumer, we're looking at local consumers, the transient student community, as well as tourists. And I think one of probably the most innovative projects that we've done is we created a beauty box specifically for South Asian women. We know that South Asian women, so Indian, Pakistani, are extremely engaged with beauty. You know, they are beauty obsessed. And we wanted to sort of showcase how at the Estée Lauder Companies across our portfolio, we have the right products to satisfy her needs. And it was about creating a box that was specifically curated for her, which has done really well, you know, in terms of consumer engagement, in terms of bringing new consumers to the brand. And I think even more importantly, now the brands are really creating a dialogue with this consumer base in a very new and innovative way.
And how did you know what to include in that box?
It was really, a lot of it was from speaking to women. You know, we do a lot of research to understand what are your beauty goals, what are your concerns, who are your beauty idols, and really speaking to her to understand what are the products that she's looking for, what are her pain points, what are the products that she thinks doesn't exist for her in the marketplace, and really curating all of that together.
So what's a typical day for you in the office?
Oh, well, as you can imagine, given sort of the vast number of consumers that we're talking about, I don't really have a typical day, but a lot of it is really engaging with the different brands and the different functions. So one day it might be working with a creative team to understand what is the design of a South Asian beauty box supposed to look like. You know, it might be working with education teams to say, we're seeing a lot of Chinese students who are coming to the UK. How do we speak to her in a different way than a Chinese tourist or a Chinese local? So it really is this idea of relationship building and really providing support to all of our brands across all the functions to ensure that we come across as authentic as we can.
Do you think then there are any particular communities or types of people that the beauty industry hasn't quite met the needs of yet?
Well, I think, you know, this idea of beauty diversity or inclusion, you know, several years ago, it probably was the case that a lot of women weren't feeling included. And I think especially as an organization, as Estee Lauder Companies, and when you look at my particular role, we really are trying to ensure that, you know, any community can come to us and they can feel included. We're always trying to stay up on top of, you know, what's happening in the industry. So are you first, second, third generation local consumer? Or we're seeing a lot of evolution in terms of the tourist. You know, as we see emerging middle classes in areas like Southeast Asia, are we really understanding the Thai consumer and the, you know, Indonesian consumer, for example? So I think, you know, I can speak from Estee Lauder Company's standpoint, we really are trying to change that conversation and really push this idea of inclusivity.
And that's really interesting because for Estee Lauder, I mean, diversity and inclusivity is a big part of its overall strategy. Do you have much overlap then with your role and the teams that work in diversity and inclusivity?
Yeah, you know, I think absolutely, because we look at this whole discipline as being very holistic, you know, so it isn't about checking the box in marketing, but not checking the box in other areas of inclusivity and diversity. So I think really, if as an organization, we want to come across as authentic and genuine and really creating that sense of connection, we have to make sure all the key players and stakeholders within this discipline are really speaking to each other.
And you also talked a little bit about tourism and Estee Lauder's role in terms of trying to figure out what tourists actually want when they're over here or how they want to shop. I mean, how do you go about understanding tourists?
Well, I think, you know, tourism has just been booming for us, as for a lot of other industries over the past few months. And I think one of the key factors is looking at a couple things. One, who are the tourists that are coming? Who are we seeing at the counters? You know, our point of sale teams who work at counter are a wealth of information. They can give us real-time information on what are the conversations people are having, what are the tourists talking about, so we really can have that knowledge immediately to address. Also, I think being a global company and really speaking a global language, we really have the opportunity to connect with our home markets. So what is happening in China so that we make sure we're up to speed? What's happening in the Middle East? And also, you know, through my role, one of the big things is educating the organization on what are some of the key holidays that we want to celebrate. So if the Middle Eastern customer who has just come for Ramadan and Eid, are we having the right messaging, you know, visualization to say, yes, we also celebrate with you on this big holiday? So really understanding all of those nuances. So working as an organization internally, but also globally.
And how easy is it internally and globally then to actually make changes and to react to different tourists or consumers' needs?
You know, I think as an organization, you know, especially in the UK, we really do believe in this idea of local and cultural relevance. So, of course, as an organization, you know, we want to have global messaging, but we do have the opportunity to react and to also understand who our consumer is, because we understand, we realize the importance of making sure that when a consumer comes to us here in the UK, that she feels included. Also, it's a lot of proactive planning. If we know that a big holiday is coming up, then really we work either directly with the home market or with global to really ensure that the assets that we have are the right assets and they're timely.
That's so interesting. I find it fascinating. So you're also, as part of your role, innovation director. So how do those two roles fit together?
Well, I think, you know, as innovation is, you know, looking at what's happening in the market, what's happening with trends. And so it is a little bit of a dual role, but I think also in the space of cultural relevancy, because it is a very unique role and it is a new role, we don't necessarily have the same parameters that you might have in other disciplines. Of course, we always stick to the corporate, you know, the corporate ethos and the brand ethos and ensure we are, you know, if we're doing programs by brand, they fit within the brand properly, but we have the opportunity to kind of do things outside of the box and really think about how are we connecting, a lot of test and learn activations. Is it working? Is it not working? What do we do to make it work harder and smarter? So we get to be very innovative in that space alone.
And what would you say are some of the most innovative things coming out of Estee Lauder at the moment?
Well, I think in terms of, you know, this space, I think a lot of it is, you know, a lot of the programs that we're working on. You know, we do a lot of programs with our global teams. For instance, we know Double Wear, our number one foundation, which has 44 shades. We're doing a lot of activation to understand women of color, their skin tones and their undertones and how, you know, what are the products. So really ensuring that our lineup of 44, which is quite strong, is continuing to evolve and continuing to look at what's happening in that space. I think, you know, we did a pop-up shop downstairs for Chinese New Year, which was dedicated to the Chinese New Year holiday, where all of the brands who had special activations and messaging, it was a real place for the Chinese consumer to come and sort of get all of their essentials for Chinese New Year, which you haven't really seen in this space. It was a pop-up. So I think these are the ways that we're really trying to be innovative and speak to the consumer.
And where do you get your inspiration for innovation from at Estee Lauder?
Gosh, you know, I think inspiration comes from everywhere. I think it's really hard to pinpoint exactly where it comes from. I think one of the best parts about this role is that I get the opportunity to be exposed to a lot of different things outside of beauty. You know, so when I attend cultural functions, or when you go into Chinatown, or just when you're walking down the street, I think there are so many things that can trigger an idea, or so many things that you can see that maybe don't have that direct connection or link, but then you think, gosh, wouldn't that be amazing if we could somehow implement that in a very different way, you know, within the corporation.
So coming back a little bit to your career and how you ended up where you are today, can you tell us a bit about your early career and just how you ended up in beauty?
Well, it's actually not a very straightforward story, which makes it quite interesting, because after I graduated university, I'd always had a passion for beauty, but I never thought about the beauty industry. I was clearly going to medical school. I had sort of done all of that. And my father, in his wisdom, had said, listen, why don't you take a year off? Because once you start medical school, that's it. I started working for Bloomingdale's, and I went in on a marketing track, and I kind of never looked back. And then within my post-grad work, I did some work at beauty companies in marketing. And that's sort of how my career started. And I've really had the opportunity, you know, primarily working in marketing, but I've worked for a lot of different companies. I've worked in regional roles for North America and the UK. I've worked in global roles. So I've really had a great opportunity. And then this role came about, like I said, about 3.5 years ago, and it was a great way to take all the work that I had done from a global and affiliate standpoint, my marketing expertise, but really take it to the next level in terms of thinking about education and PR and visual merchandising, and really kind of connecting the dots between affiliate and global, because I look at sort of the consumer, you know, all over, from all over the world.
So you've worked for Estee Lauder for 3 and a bit years, as you mentioned there. You've also worked for, I think, Lancome and Prada and some other brands as well. I mean, what were some of the highlights of your whole experience today? And if you're allowed to say, which was your favorite brand?
Well, so I've actually been with the Estee Lauder companies for 10 years.
Oh, 10 years,
yeah,
wow.
10
okay.
years,
so,
yes.
But
yes.
In the current role?
In this current role for 3.5, okay. Absolutely. You know, I think it's really hard to pick a favorite brand, in the sense it'd be like picking your favorite child.
Yeah, so it's almost impossible.
Exactly. So it is almost impossible. And I think, you know, giving credit to our competitor brands, obviously I have a lot of love for the Estee Lauder companies, as I've been here for so long. But even with our competitor brands, I think each brand has a very unique voice and a unique set of products and ethos that they bring to the table. That's why they're all very successful. You know, I think in terms of my career, I think this has been one of the most exciting opportunities, because it is a new role. It wasn't anything that existed. So it was very interesting in terms of being able to create the position and see what we could do with it and to see how far it's come. I think other, you know, super exciting opportunities was when I did work for Prada in terms of launching skincare that was very innovative at the time in terms of the mini capsules and sort of how the product was dispensed. I also think just having the opportunity to work for, you know, bigger brands that have so much awareness, such as a Lancome, or I worked for both Estee Lauder and Clinique within the organization, how these brands that are big ships and, you know, have so much awareness, how they're still able to navigate the market and really be trendsetters. You know, one of the most unique things I find about the Estee Lauder companies is this idea of being visionaries and innovative has always been part of the ethos. You know, it's always, so it's not necessarily only about new. It's about products that were innovative back then, such as the A&R product, you know, serum, which is still innovative today. You know, the product is the same. Maybe the story is a little bit different, but it resonates just as strongly, which I think is a real testament to bigger corporations.
So you've worked on a lot of sort of prestigious premium luxury brands. I mean, is there anything about the premium beauty sector that has surprised you or was unexpected compared to, say, the mass market or your years at Bloomingdale's?
You know, I think what's really unique about the prestige market, and I think we hear it, but to actually see it in action is, you know, the awareness of premium brands and prestige brands and sort of this idea of people really want to have a piece of this idea of this little bit of luxury. You know, where people are very comfortable to say, you know what, I'm okay with spending, you know, 15, 18 pounds on a lipstick because it makes me feel good. And I think it's that whole idea as well when I think about prestige and premium, it's this whole idea of service. You know, this idea of high touch, of where regardless of the brand, regardless of the price point, we really pride ourselves on being able to provide the customer with that high-touch experience. So it's not just about coming to the counter and getting the product, because you're right, you can get a lipstick from anywhere, but it's about coming to our counters to get the product, but also the service, the interaction with our point-of-sale teams that gives you that little bit of elevation that takes the product from being just a lipstick in your bag, but to something that's really special.
Do you think more consumers are open to buying premium beauty today?
I think they are. You know, I think the thing about premium beauty, like I said, first of all, everybody likes to have that little bit of purse prestige or something that's very special that they might have invested in. I also find, you know, with the whole industry and what's happening, especially when we look at sort of innovation and how far products have come, you know, no longer is a skin cream just about hydrating. You can get hydrating creams, of course, creams that are just about moisturization, which are amazing, but you're finding that there's products that really are addressing a lot of other needs that you didn't think they could. You know, products that are going to address concerns before you have to go to the dermatologist maybe. And I think customers are willing to invest in themselves. And I think the idea of when we think about the wellness trend that's going on about
absolutely massive at the moment.
Absolutely. And it's about investing in yourself. It's about taking care of yourself holistically. And I think when you think about premium products, it's that same philosophy of, you know what, I will invest in the right product because I know long term down the line, it is the right investment for me.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say keeps you motivated in your role? Is it that knowledge that you're helping all these different consumers around the world to find the right products for them, or is it something else?
No, I think it's this idea, you know, one of the things that, you know, the Lauder family has always said is every woman wants to feel beautiful, regardless of who they are or where they come from. And so I think it's this ethos of exactly making any woman who comes to our, you know, to our counters feel beautiful, whatever that might look like for her. And when you look at the emotions on women's faces when they find that right foundation or they've had a skin concern and, you know, they've used the products and it works, and just the emotion that they exude, it's amazing. You know, it's really touching. And so I think it's just this idea of, yeah, you know, you have a real opportunity to impact someone in a very special way. And I think the other thing that keeps me quite motivated is the role is never constant. There is constant evolution, constant change. You know, it's very dynamic. And while something might present itself as a challenge, it's also a big opportunity for us, whether it be a new consumer base or whatever. And so I think that keeps it very exciting. You know, I probably haven't learned as much and done as much research and studying in a long time as I have in this 3.5 years, as I really start to understand all the cultures that exist and, you know, the number of people that we see in the UK, which is amazing.
Is traveling quite a big part of your role then?
It's actually not as big as it might sound. And I think a lot of it is, you know, we do a lot of conversations through phone calls. I think nowadays there's a really, it's so much easier to feel connected to what's happening. I think we also rely, like I said, on a lot of the home markets to share with us what's happening from a trend perspective, what's happening from, you know, key influencers, what are they talking about, social listening. But we do have the opportunity to do some deep market visits as well. So it's a real balance, but it's not as travel intensive as it might sound.
So for a company that's considering creating a role that is similar to what you do in cultural relevancy, what would you say to them? What advice do you have? I mean, what would help make your job easier or better?
You know, I don't know if it would be anything to make it easier or better, but I really think it's something that you can't ignore, in the sense of, and this is where I go back to where I was saying Estee Lauder Companies is really visionary, because I think with the way the global landscape is changing, I think with this whole idea of ethnic blending, you're seeing mixed populations get better, you know, you're seeing a lot more of a global consumer. I think in order to be successful and in order to truly connect with a consumer, you have to be able to understand who she is, and you cannot ignore all these different nuances and facets that sort of make, you know, the fabric of life, if you will, very interesting. So I think it's almost a necessity for organizations outside of beauty and within beauty to really understand who that consumer is.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Monica. That brings us to the end.
Thank you, Lucy. Thank you for the time. It's been a real pleasure.